I don't know what your police captain told you about me, but I'm a different breed of
podcast.
I'm from the streets, and I'm the last
podcast.
Welcome back, listeners, to the last podcast. Today I have with us
François Pointeau.
And last time we had Qasem Ali. So, François, what was the last vacation you took?
The last vacation I took was right before the pandemic started, right before lockdown, which was nuts because I was finally starting to make a little bit of money as beverage director and a head bartender at this little restaurant. And in February, I had all this extra cash. I decided to go to Denver for a week. Because there's certain things in Denver that are legal there that aren't legal here.
No, you had a good time?
I had a wonderful time. And then I also, that same week, I spent thousands of dollars on airplane ticket, Airbnbs, and beer and pot in Denver, and then fixed my little car. And then literally 2 weeks later, shutdown happened. I'm like, motherfucker.
I know exactly.
Bad timing.
I had been going through I've been doing so much improv and everything. And right before, in December, I was reaching a high. I was going up this hill and just all these things were happening. And it was so exciting. And I was so excited for 2021. And then this 2020. Oh, gosh, it's crazy how the time just all mixed together. And then it just hit. And it's just it ripped everything out from under us. We were supposed to, be on your podcast again, the third one.
Exactly.
But what's funny about that is we're still meeting the same month.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of cool, actually. Yeah.
The funk provides, as I would say. So when was the last podcast that you did? Do you remember that?
Yeah, absolutely. I went to Austin to interview a couple of Andrew Hilbert and one of his friends. They're both writers, and Andrew is a friend of mine, and he's a very talented writer. He's also a really funny guy, and they were doing a show together in Austin. I forget the name of the bar. And I went there with my friend Olivia, who helped me record the show, and I did it live. I love to do live shows in front of audiences. That it's really nerve-wracking, but in the end, they're so much fun.
It's rewarding.
It's really...
Unless it really sucks.
Unless it really sucks, and you're sweating bullets.
Yeah, I would argue that it's still even rewarding when it sucks, because it's you learn from those experiences.
Yeah. So that podcast was fun because it was all dick jokes and fart jokes, which I don't usually do on my podcast. My podcasts are... they're not intellectual by any means, but I'm trying to get... I do long format conversations, conversational style podcasts where I'm talking with one or two individuals, sometimes a group of three or four, but usually one or two individuals. And I try to get at the core of who they are artistically and what they want to do. And they're usually writers or musicians or chefs or whatever, somebody that uses their creativity for what they do. And so I had these really awesome podcasts, and I had recently interviewed Deborah Mouton, which is she's this wonderful poet from Houston, and she's the first poet laureate of Houston, Texas. I might be getting this wrong. Anyways, it was an incredible podcast. I was so proud of this podcast because we had some really good conversation. And then I did this podcast on the stage, and it was all fart jokes and dick jokes, and then I'm thinking, that's cool, you can do one of these every once in a while. And it ended up being my last podcast. Which is good, it's a funny podcast.
Doing draw book all these years, dicks are just one of the most drawn things. There's just something about dicks that just people cannot get away from, so it's
50% of the population, more or less, plus or minus a few, has a dick.
Even some women have dicks now.
Yeah, exactly. So whatever.
In your podcast, like you said, you like having artists and poets and everything on and stuff. And again, I'd like to thank you for 2 years ago when you had me on your fourth episode or whatever, you were doing that. You were just celebrating artists and musicians for who they are and talking to them and interviewing them. And I would say that changed my life. So I'm very thankful for that.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, Mala. Leading into that, when was the last time someone reached out and was like, what you did was that, you know, that was so good. Like, that changed me. Like,
well, you just did. That was the last time.
Yeah. Do you remember the last time before that?
That was cheating, right?
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. You're answering the question.
I don't really remember, but I do people like, you know, my friend Joy, who I see every once in a while, you know, like people, when I meet people who with whom I've done a conversation, they always mention that conversation, almost always. And unless they're people who are used to doing that kind of thing, but people who only have only done once or twice,
it sticks out to them.
Yeah, it sticks out. Like, I've had people, you know, and don't ask me specifics, but I've had people ask me about when I was on at KOOP in Austin for 6 years, interviewing people every week. You know, I've had people, and I left that show in 2015, and I've had people reach out to me and says, "Hey, can you send me a copy of that show that we did like 12 years ago?" Yeah. I'm like, "Dude, that show's gone.
If we recorded it maybe 2 years ago, it would be on some file, but like that's gone."
Right? Yeah.
That's so crazy how like even 10 years ago, like stuff that like so many people did just wasn't as accessible as it is now. Like now you could like literally record a podcast, and there's like stuff helping you do this, like Anchor. You know, they'll like post everything for you in all places. And I remember after being on your podcast, I wanted to do this podcast and going on to like Podbean and stuff, where it's like they only would sponsor your podcast on their site. They wouldn't, you know, post it to the other sites and stuff, you know.
Actually, Podbean does. It's just the way that you set it up. But every time I publish a podcast on Podbean, they would send it out to all the major...
You're right. Yeah. What I mean, though, is recorrecting what I've just phrased. I went on recently to find some people's podcasts that I was on, and they're just not there anymore.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the Podbean or some other place just, like, took it off, you know?
Well, you have to pay them. So
see, and that right there is, like, even, like, SoundCloud. You can, like, put stuff on SoundCloud or make a new email account and just leave it there forever. It'll be there, like, always.
Yeah.
But, like, it sucks when you lose history and stuff like that. Like, that's how you get lost media, you know?
Yeah, and, you know, all those podcasts that I personally recorded, you know, not my radio show, but my podcast, I've kept a file of every single one of those shows.
Smart.
But even though I haven't recorded a podcast, and I'm not sure that I'll restart my podcast, I want to, but I'm not sure, I still pay Podbean every year so that...
You can keep those?
I can keep those on the air.
That's crazy. And that's why, for me, as a musician, I publish all my music through CD Baby, which is a one-time fee. Like, I pay $90 to do a full pro plan, and they release my music to all platforms. They do all the coverage. They look for, like, royalties and everything. And I never have to pay them another dime. And so my music is forever. It's literally, like, never going to leave the internet, and they're always going to take it to the next spot. There's, like, other companies, it's like... You have to pay yearly, and it's like, I don't know if I'm going to have a job next year, you know? Like, I don't know if I'm going to even be alive, you know? It's like, what if I die, and then suddenly, like, my music's just wiped off because I can't make a payment because I'm dead, and my family, you know, doesn't want to continue that stuff.
Well, and you have to realize that through the last few hundreds of years, you know, there's been lots of artists, and most of that work is gone.
It's gone. Yeah. Absolutely.
And it's okay.
It is and it isn't. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And it's natural.
The thing is that what you're doing now is going to affect somebody else.
Yeah.
And that what that person is doing is going to affect somebody else, and that's how it grows.
Yeah.
And maybe you'll become really well known, or maybe you won't, or maybe a person that has been influenced by your work will become very well known, or maybe they won't. You know, it's like, and I've published 4 books now, and nobody's ever heard of them. And
I've heard of them.
And when I die, you know, probably... a year after that, you know, there won't be a copy left anywhere. And that's okay. It made me happy when I was alive.
Yeah, and there will, though. Like, because I know that you had a bunch of copies and you gave them out to people. I still have 2 of your books.
Yeah.
And so it's like, they just... Information has a way of expanding. Again, through the funk, as I've talked about previously. And so it's like, it just passes on. And that is, in a way... I would argue how we become almost immortal, But then, just like we're saying, some of that information just gets lost. It just goes up in the air. But it still influenced something or someone. And so it was still passed on, even though it's gone.
And you don't know what's going to hang on. Yeah. You have no idea. Like, people who were incredibly famous writers 100 years ago, if you were to mention their names today, you would not know who the hell they are. And yet, some people who were not that famous today, they, you know, you're like, oh, that guy or woman changed literature as we know it. But when they were writing it, they had no fucking clue.
They had no clue. and literally, we would not be here without those people. Like, even if they had no effect on us directly, they indirectly influenced our future.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And so, it's crazy. When was the last time that you were creating something and you felt that? That's like, this is going to influence the future.
When I was a kid, I thought that way a lot because I wanted to be a famous poet. Mm-hmm. I don't think that way anymore. It's just like, I write my stuff, you know, and especially in the last year, I've been so, so incredibly busy reinventing my whole life and, you know, creating a business for the first time in my life that's actually solvent and making me money and changing every which way that I look at life that... When I do have a second to work on new work, I just don't think about it that way. I'm just thankful that I have a second to work on that work.
It's such a different production of media as well. It's like when you're first starting to get into music and art and stuff, you think that you have to make this like great product to sell and stuff, which you kind of do. The capitalistic version is like, if you want to like sell this thing, it's got to like present this image of other people will, you know, feed into it. But really it's like, once you just like kind of move past that and are just like, I'm going to just do whatever. I'm going to be me, you know?
And that's even more important.
Yeah, it's pure.
Quite honestly. And it's not just about being pure, but it's like you have to, in writing, you know, I publish these small, usually about 80 pages to 100 page books. And, you know, and to get in my last book, Songs of the Rolling Chateau, it's like, you know, it's like 42 poems. But to write that 80-page book, it took like, you know, like 300 pages of bullshit.
Yeah, yeah. And then you just like cut down from there. Right. It's just like films, you know. It's like a lot of people don't think that like when you're shooting a scene, like let's just say any scene, they shoot most of those like at least three times.
Oh, minimum.
Yeah. And so it's like you only see the final shot. Of like, and let's use like voiceovers for instance. Like if you're watching like a voiceover cartoon or something like that, there it's so likely that the voice clip that one voice clip that they used, they had that actor say that same thing like ow, right? They had that actor say ow 100 different ways. Like say it like you're falling out of a window. Say it like you're falling out of a car. Say it like you just got hit with this thing. Say it more quietly. And then they like just cut all. They take all those hundreds of clips, and they use one. Yep. They use one clip.
Yeah, I did. I did a voiceover for corporate films.
Whoa.
The only reason I never even looked into doing that, but people would call me because I speak French, and so they needed a French translation of whatever corporate film they were making, and so. It's the same thing. You read this. Stuff, this script that's incredibly boring, but sometimes you have to do like three or four or five takes.
When was the last thing you were on? Like,
I don't remember any of the projects I was on. It's just like I said, it was corporate films, you know, in-house corporate films. And I don't even remember the subject of I think it was something to do with LinkedIn.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But I'm not sure. It was like, you know, 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And I just...
And you're just speaking French.
And I didn't give a fuck. I just... here, give me my paycheck. Thank you. Bye.
What was the last fast food place you went inside of?
Oh, I don't go inside in it. I don't really eat fast food. But the last fast food place I had, and I'm not proud of myself because I try not to eat any fast food... it was Whataburger.
What a burger.
Yeah, and that was literally this weekend. I was really nervous. I was doing my first event for my business, and I didn't know what I was getting into. And I got there really early, or I was getting there really early, and I was super hungry. I forgot to make myself breakfast, so I had like an egg. Not, obviously not an egg McMuffin, because that's McDonald's. Yeah. But whatever their fucking version of it is.
What an egg. What, yeah. what a muffin.
What a muffin.
Whataburger is crazy. Like, people genuinely create their aesthetic around Whataburger.
It doesn't make sense. Like, I have a friend on Facebook who's like, Whataburger is so much better than In-N-Out. Fight me. I'm like, dude, they're both shitty.
Yeah, they're both just these fast food restaurants that are just trying to get your money in some way for you to eat a quick meal. Yeah. And you're wearing their clothes? Like, right. What is this?
Though, you know, I almost worked with Whataburger. I'd run into, I can't remember how this happened, but this person had written a book on the history of Whataburger, and they were asking me to shoot a little film on it. Oh, and that was like a few years ago when I was still in Austin. And so for a while there, I almost made a movie about Whataburger.
What? Dang.
It didn't happen.
What happened to it?
It just kind of
fell through
like most projects do. You have to, you have to try a million different projects, and then, you know, one or two will eventually.
It's just like the takes we were talking about. Yeah. You got to do all these takes, but then only one take is used.
But the biggest thing, though, is you got to do. Yeah. You got to do something.
Yeah.
That is so important. It's like when I started this little business, I never even made a fresh squeezed lemonade in my life. And I didn't know what the fuck I was doing, but I started doing it. And that's how my business grew, is because I went out. Instead of just talking about it and what am I going to do? Oh, shit, it's scary to do. Oh, my God, I'm blah, blah, blah. You just got to jump in.
And I think is a part of it. The first process of being like, of just talking about it. It's an idea. And it's just like, oh, man, what if this doesn't work? What if that doesn't work? But you can't let that stop you.
No, eventually you just got to fucking do it.
You got to do it, yeah.
It's like, you know, it's like going back to writing. Nobody, unless you're a genius, and there are very few geniuses in this world, Nobody is going to write the perfect novel or the perfect poem or the perfect short story or the perfect movie ever on the first try.
Yeah.
You're going to write a bunch of crap.
Yeah.
But you have to be willing to write that crap.
And there's not even, like, I would argue that perfection doesn't even exist. Everything is perfectly imperfect.
Yeah.
And so it's like, even when you're like first starting off, and we talked about this on your last podcast, even when you're like just starting off and just doing something, it's like, oh, I want to take up a hobby. Like, let's say crocheting. You're going to, if you have no experience, like for me personally, it's like I picked up oil painting recently. I like took a class. I haven't got to finish it yet because I got COVID and I had to postpone it for a bit. But it's like stepping into something that I've always wanted to do, but I have no experience about it. And oil painting is crazy. It's so insane.
What made you want to go into oil painting rather than acrylic, which is much easier?
So it was just what was offered to me. I got offered like kind of a scholarship to take a class.
Oh, okay.
And so I jumped on it because like what I've always wanted to do is take the Art of Sealing series and learn how to paint well and then paint those and make those like a kind of like painted series. Like take those photographs and turn them into canvases that I could, you know, sell. Or,
oh, that's cool.
Yeah. But for me, I have always been, when I create art, I work in minimalism. And so it's kind of hard for me to envision or even like create these like, you know, just cool, full pieces. And so like oil painting is just like so out of my wheelhouse that it's just like, but you got to start somewhere. You got to suck. You got to suck at first, and then you just start kind of slowly getting better.
Yeah, but you took a medium that's really difficult.
Yeah. It's so difficult. Yeah. And again, I'm not super artistic. I mean, I am, but like I'm not to the level of like, you know, Van Gogh or Da Vinci and stuff. I am in my own way, but like I can't do full pieces like that. Yeah, you know, like I'm sure if I took the time, maybe I could, you know, but like the way that each of our brain works is completely different. So it's like, additionally, it's like you don't have to be these things. They were themselves, you know, and that's why we have them. And so you take their influence and you become you, you know, like, But yeah, we're just going on a whole tangent there.
What made you start to do improvisation?
So for me, I had done it in I've always enjoyed being an entertainer and such. And I did it in college. When I was studying theater, I went out to... Well, I did it in high school. We had like an improv sketch troupe. And I loved it. Like, I just fell in love because it's like you're sitting in groups or breaking off into groups. And then you're all like just... you're sharing the ideas as writers that you had for like the whole week or the day. And then you're all just like... polishing those ideas and just like, oh man, that's so funny. What if this also happened? And then it's like you create these like hilarious sketches, you know, just together. And I love that and I fell in love. And then in college, I tried out for the improv troupe and I got on. And that's when I was doing short form improv, like Whose Line Is It Anyway and stuff. And I also just fell in love with that and just being creative on the spot and with other people. But what really got me into like, the level of improv I'm in now is communication and just it's how I would analyze it kind of psychologically is like it's community outside of church. Like there's a lot of like, I don't know if you were ever religious or anything.
But I was really into church when I was much younger.
And so a lot of people go to church or they find church because of that community.
Yeah.
And it's some place to take your kids and, you know, have them grow up in a safe environment, you know, or...
Yeah, it's the only thing about church that I miss.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why, so because it's this home away from home, in a way. It's people who are at least trying to support you. I can't say that they're all positive communities, because a lot of church communities are toxic communities. They think, you know, they're... I'm not going to say the semantics of it, but, like, it's community. And that is important because humans are social creatures. But that's why I think improv is so important, because it is also almost the same community. You're just not worshiping this like thing. You're focusing on a craft.
So how has improv changed your life?
It has taught me to be a better listener and how to work more like in the moment. Just be present.
See, that's what radio did for me.
Yeah.
So the first time I knew I wanted to do radio... I knew I wanted to do radio, but I'd never talked on the mic, and I went to the meeting for Co-op. It's a community radio station in Austin, and it's a wonderful place. And I signed all the paperwork, and they sent me, and they asked me, what kind of show would you do if we offered you a show? I said I would do a show about poetry and wine, because of the two things that I was very passionate about at the mm-hmm. time. And so they put me as an intern on their show called Writing on the Air. Which they interviewed writers and storytellers every week. And eventually, after 2 weeks, 3 weeks of interning, they asked me to join the show as a co-host. And eventually, became my own show.
That's so legit.
Yeah. But my first time in the studio, Dylan, who was the main host at the time, during the show, this is live radio, okay? This was... live radio, like what you're saying is being heard by people 30 seconds later. Yeah.
It's not edited in post-production and then posted later.
Yeah.
It's now.
Yeah. And he was like, Francois, do you want to say anything? I'm like, don't even look at me. Don't talk to me. I am not talking on that mic.
I don't exist.
I was so freaking nervous. Like I was like walking in the studio in the shadows. Like, please don't even look at me. I'm not here.
I'm not ready yet. So then when did you take the first jump?
Literally just weeks later. And my first show was December of 2009. And I was so freaking nervous. And Dylan had promised that he would be there. And the other co-hosts had promised that they would be there. And, you know, you have to run the board as well. You know, it's a professional radio board, you know, to edit as you're talking.
Wow.
And those two fuckers didn't show up. My first show...
So you just had to do it live.
I had to do it live.
Oh my God.
Well,
I mean, it's not always good for everyone, but that's basically like a pushing baby bird out of the nest kind of thing. It's like, you're either going to fly or you're going to hit your face.
Yeah. Right. And in some ways, that's the way I work best.
Yeah.
Like when I worked in film, I was a PA for forever. And then I was a Grip Electric a little bit. And, And I was working on this film set, and don't ask me what the film was or the commercial. I have no fucking clue. But the guy said, I need you to drive the art truck to Dallas tonight. And I'm like, okay. I had never driven a huge truck in my life. I was so fucking scared. But I did it. And afterwards, I'm like, okay, I can do this.
Yeah, now I can do it. I can do anything.
Right.
Yeah. Wow. So when was the last time you had to do something like that?
It's when I started this business, that I'm in. Yeah. I got furloughed. I don't want to get into specifics, but whatever. I didn't want to go back to my job for many different reasons. I was working volunteering on a farm, and it's like, I have to figure out how to take care of myself by myself.
Yeah.
And that's when I started thinking about this business. And when I finally decided on the type of business I was going to do, and I had been slowly investing in that business, you know, I invested $6,000, which is not much. But thanks to Bernie Sanders, who fought for us to get that $600 a week, without that $600 a week, I would not have started my business and I would have become homeless.
Yeah.
And today I'm solvent and I'm hiring an employee.
It really depresses me thinking about like the people who didn't even get that, you know, or like really needed it.
Yeah.
And we just weren't helping, you know. No. It's like every other country on the planet, like they like were giving them thousands of dollars like weekly, you know, or monthly.
Yeah.
And we got 3 stimulus checks.
Yeah. And I'm hearing to this day, because I come from the restaurant industry, and I hear to this day, oh, all these people are getting the free money and they don't want to come back to work. Say, no, motherfucker, you've been paying people $2.13 an hour for the last 20 years, cashing in on this, making all this freaking money. Maybe now you should think about actually paying your employees.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Because what it is just like you said, it's like now all these people have suddenly this influx of money to go do what they wanted to do.
Yeah.
It's like,
that's the way it should be.
Yeah, exactly.
That's and if you want them to work for you, pay them.
Yeah. That's how I think true capitalism should be, because it's like, what we're seeing is like the businesses who have come into control, essentially, like, they don't want any competition. But that's what capitalism is, competition. And so it's like you're fighting against this progression.
Yeah.
It's insane.
But yeah, so to answer your question, my last scary moment was my first day to set up my booth in my first market. I was so fucking nervous.
Yeah.
I was so fucking nervous. And this weekend I did an event at a wonderful, beautiful event. I'm so glad I did it. But it was my first special event that I did with complete strangers, and I did it by myself. My employee couldn't be there because she's out of town in Santa Fe this week. And I wasn't that as nervous as I was on my first day, but I was nervous. I'm nervous every time I do something new.
Yeah.
Because I'm a fucking little bitch sometimes.
You just don't know how reality is going to treat you.
Exactly. Like, and that scares me.
Yeah.
But the only way to move forward is to move forward.
Is to do it. So how did it turn out both times?
My first day was amazing. I realized that I could do it.
Yeah.
I realized that nobody was going to eat me. I realized that I could be my own boss. I realized that I wasn't going to make money for a while. And I was going to have to work my ass off before I could pay myself. Today, by the way, April 19th, 2021 is the first day that I paid myself. And I have been doing this for 9 months.
And that's actually like really good. Like less than a year. Like,
yeah, less than a year.
That's amazing. What was the last fruit or vegetable that you picked at the farm? What was the last thing you farmed?
You would ask me that because that is the one plant that I can't pronounce, so I'm going to try. Nasturtium. I can't pronounce the name of that plant. It's Nasturtium? Nasturtium. It's an edible flower.
Wow. I'd never heard of that.
Well, you can eat. The flowers are red, orange, and yellow, and the leaves are about 5 inches diameter. And they taste like radish, and they're delicious, and they're beautiful to put on your salad.
So that's all you do is you just eat them? There's no other...
No, you don't have to do anything with them. You just put them in
your
salad.
They don't use them for, like, medicines or anything?
No.
Nostalgia.
I mean, maybe they do. I don't know. I think that's the last time I picked. That's the last thing I harvested on Friday. Yeah, I think so.
What was the last thing you planted?
Oh, so my job at the farm for the last year has been to seed all the lettuce and all the herbs every week.
Wow.
Which today is, that's what I usually did on Monday. Today is the first Monday that I haven't, because now I'm paying myself for my own business. And by the way, that's Verde Greens Farm, and they're amazing guys, and I love them, and they do great work. And it's a hydroponic lettuce farm. So mostly we grow lettuce, but we also have herbs, you know, like basil and parsley and all those kinds of things.
That's so rewarding.
But yeah, every Monday I would see thousands of heads of lettuce and thousands of little plugs of herbs.
Wow. Yeah. How long does it take those to grow? Like,
so lettuce in hydroponically grown lettuce, you know, that's going with nutrient water and all that, it has approximately, you know, a 6 to 8 week cycle. So from from the time you seed to the time you harvest is anywhere between 6 to 8 weeks.
That's not bad.
It's incredibly fast.
That's crazy. Yeah. But definitely, like, if you were starving and you planted this, like, seed, it's like, oh, I'm going to have food in 6 to 8 weeks. It's like, oh, I don't think you're going to make it, buddy.
Well, that's why you have to time yourself. Yeah. You know, you plant so many this week, so many the following week, so many the following week, so that once your cycle gets going, you have lettuce every week.
That's insane. Well, do you have any last things to say before we go?
Why did you put a red shirt on today?
So this shirt I actually bought recently. So over the quarantine, as most of us have, I have gained some weight back. And this shirt is one of the few shirts that fits me now. So I'm wearing it. And I think I look pretty good in red.
Yeah, you look good in that in red. Yeah, red looks good on you.
Yeah. Well, if y'all can see at home, I'm in a red shirt and I look good. Francois, thanks for having being on today.
Absolutely. I mean, thanks for doing this. This is fun.
Absolutely. See y'all next time. Or catch y'all next time.